forth, and we're here to have another little ching-wang with Jason Patrick, who is on the line now. Hey, Jason.
Hey, how you doing?
Better than I was yesterday. So, you had court today?
Yeah, court today. It was a short day, which is interesting because definitely in the last case, whenever if the defense even prepared like there was going to be any downtime, you know, the judge turned into like an exorcism and her head twisted around and she screamed and chastised him for wasting the jury's time and not being prepared and on to oblivion, just, got irate with him. And the prosecution did it today, and really, like, nothing happened.
Well, of course.
You know, they said, we've moved quicker than we thought, and we're not prepared to bring any more witnesses today. And she's sort of just like, oh, well, let's see if we can get them moved out. And just a completely different judge, comparatively, when the prosecution's not prepared to bring their trial, to when she thinks the defense isn't ready.
Okay, so
that was towards the end, more towards the end of the day. So
okay, no obvious signs of bias here. No, nothing to see here. Move along.
There's I've never seen anything more biased in my entire life. But and which will go to more. There's more to that story in today's thing. But so the prosecution's day today is really just a parade, a 4 hour long parade of bullets and guns, none of which belong to any of the defendants on trial. It's just I don't remember how many there's like 20 something. So there's this long, every question is, okay, can you circle what section D, what vehicle is this? Where is it? Okay, now can you show us, is a picture inside, is that? Yeah, okay, will you pull up evidence number 168? Can you tell us what that is? Can you tell us where you found it? Can you tell us what it looks like? And they just do that over and over and over again, like 27 times. And they bounce around, and it's, you know, sort of bullets and ammunition and firearms or magazines or just anything. So, you know, hundreds of people come here. Some of them fled in the middle of the night. But like I said, it doesn't belong, none of that belongs to anybody that's on trial. So it's an interesting, just a long parade.
So,
just the prosecution talking to an FBI witness for 4 hours.
Okay, so essentially they just brought in more FBI agents, kind of what we anticipated yesterday, and point. I mean, it's me and you both know that we've already said in one of these updates that you're trying to craft a narrative. You know, whether you're the defense or whether you're the prosecution. Does it seem like? I mean, me and you both know what the narrative is that they want to try to paint. But does it seem like, based off of their questions, that they're actually succeeding in painting the narrative that they're building up to, which is this was...
What it looks like to me, and, you know, I sort of had this opinion from way back that this whole thing's, sort of gun confiscation and gun law and whatever. It's a political... I've thought it was a political hijack ploy. So the reason that you... Eventually, everything in this trial is of a public nature, right? It's not so public right now because it's in the middle of process, and boy, you don't want to publicize the verdict, especially if it's an acquittal. But it's really just to get all the stuff in evidence and then later go, see, look at all the guns and the magazines and the bullets. We need to make more laws because these people are dangerous. You know, they're going to stick with this dangerous narrative, and I doubt it's over once the acquittals are done. Right? It's all the evidence is really more for political appears to me more of a political nature to have public pictures of the evidence that they're trying to introduce. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
What they're trying to do is rack up statistics for revisionist historians.
Sure.
Okay.
Right.
That's kind
of... Here's why, you know, 20 years from now, here's why we had to make those gun laws, because these evil cowboys were talking about the Constitution, and it was scary.
Yeah.
Is sort of where, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, there's no evidence for what they're trying to say. So the only reason that you would add to oblivion this stuff is there. It sure seems like there's an alternative agenda. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, we'll see. All I can say is, yeah, you get all these introduced, and later on, I can see, you know, 6 months from now, some expose where they flash all this stuff across some screen on some TV show and talk about how evil guns are.
This is kind of like a reverse Waco, but it's a what I mean is this is going to be a PR campaign for the government side, you know, because when Waco first happened, we didn't have the internet and everything, so everyone was kind of like, yeah, go federal government. And then later on, as we found out more information about what happened with Waco, we were like, wait a second. So it sounds like to me...
Well, you got to think, if there's a protest somewhere else, like, say, Standing Rock or whatever, that, you know, hey, the reason we had to murk everybody is because remember all those cowboys that had all those guns that nobody knew was there? I don't know. It's just, like I said, it seems political in nature. But it sort of has since the beginning. You know, that's not new. But when you're fighting for your life in federal court, you know, sometimes you lose the big picture. You know, the big picture's always been there, and I've always been idea of it. But when I'm sitting there, you know, bored out of my mind, where they introduce just all this stuff that's just like, what? You know, we'll see what happens. But that's what we did today.
Are any of the defense attorneys, whenever all these statistics and pictures and graphs and irrelevant questions are being asked of witnesses, is there any objections that are coming from the defense attorneys as far as, you know, objection relevance?
Well, that's the nature of the whole conspiracy, right? If it's a conspiracy, everything's evidence. In furtherance of the conspiracy. Well, this could have been in furtherance of the conspiracy, or that could have been in furtherance of the conspiracy. This imaginary conspiracy, everything's evidence of the conspiracy. It's, you know, that's why such a broad range of evidence gets in, is the vagueness of the conspiracy charge.
Mm-hmm.
So
far, the prosecution has just done broad brushstrokes over the whole incident, but hasn't kind of focused on any of you defendants in this round of trials specifically?
Yeah, I mean, the whole case in both cases is, hey, these are some guys, and some of these guys did this 2 years ago, and 2 years ago it was scary, and so those same guys, and then a bunch of other guys are now here, and they're using their Second Amendment right alongside their First, and boy, that's scary, and so it must be a conspiracy. There's no, right? At the end of the day, you and I know it's a protest for the Hammonds. It's a peaceful assembly to petition the government for a redress of grievances. The grievances have been put in. We're going to assemble here, and we want answers to the grievances. But now to paint that with a conspiracy, now you're trying to paint over that. You're trying to paint over that with a conspiracy.
Well,
so, and you're basically saying the conspiracy is that everybody was there, and they brought all this stuff, and so that makes a conspiracy.
Well, typically, I mean, from my understanding of the point of a conspiracy is to achieve some type of a goal. Like Kennedy's head did go off the side of the car, Towers came down, whatever your beliefs on those conspiracies are, it's a matter of record, conspiracies happen. Typically, conspiracies happen to as a means to an end, so are they just completely ignoring the fact that if there was a conspiracy, the ends would be, and it gets right back to the Hammonds?
Well, I think it doesn't go to the Hammonds. What the government stipulates is because these people were protesting here, nobody could go to work. What they're saying is because there was a protest there, nobody could go to work, and they couldn't go to work because they were intimidated, and that is now their conspiracy.
Oh, okay.
Nice. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, people talked about Sugar Pine Mine, which was a thing in Oregon, and it was about miners' rights, and miners' rights were going to get trampled on. And I remember there was a sort of a protest, it's hard to call it a protest because, you know, the protests that you see nowadays, it wasn't anything like that. It was some speakers that were talking about rights, and those speakers had their rally, if you want to call it, in the parking lot of the BLM office in Oregon. And, you know, it was sort of publicized, we're going to go to the BLM office, we're going to have speakers, and we're going to rally for this support. Well, BLM office in Oregon shut the office down and everybody left. Didn't go to work that day. Mm-hmm. And so, they had a rally, and then the people that rallied left, and then I guess the BLM must have went back to work the next day. And the reason they didn't go to work was because of fear of interactions with protesters or what have you. So they could really just paint over that with a similar conspiracy idea, right? Basically what you have is you have citizens trying to engage their government in, hey, by the way, you're violating our rights. And what the government says is, oh, look, there's angry citizens outside. Run. We're afraid. And depending on how long they stay there, we'll charge them with conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? It's just so asinine. All you have are people who are upset about the overreaches of government and want some real answers to the question, some real change, some real something tangible, right? We're supposed to be able to fix it. We're supposed to be able to engage our government in a way to make changes and things.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to go assert your First Amendment to petition the government for redress of grievances in the best way you know how, and the, you know, and the government's going to say run, hide, they want to redress grievances.
Mm-hmm.
And then say we were afraid, now we're going to charge you with conspiracy. It's like, listen, all we wanted to do was talk to you about this. Have you addressed these real tangible problems that we're talking about?
Right.
No, we're afraid. That's a conspiracy, whatever you were doing.
We're conspiracy theorists.
You see what I'm saying? It's where does it? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The government's a conspiracy theorist. Hey, they want to talk to us. That's kind of scary.
Oh no. Well, so
they want their problems addressed. Oh no. But outside of that, the most compelling thing, and you know, given what you do, you're going to want a copy of this, a copy of the transcript today. The government is trying to introduce into evidence a broadcast by Oregon Public Broadcasting. But it's not a broadcast of a complete sort of interview. It's basically a gotcha moment where somebody with an axe to grind, Sepulveda with OPB, is openly hostile to the ideas of Ammon Bundy. The whole thing, he's openly hostile about it. Well, he did an interview, or they're calling it an interview, but you can tell, like, the piece that they broadcast on OPB is, like, right, it's like a center segment of a longer segment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's edited and clipped down, you know, probably mostly to shine somebody in the most unflattering light possible. So the government wants to introduce it as evidence. Well, the argument is it's incomplete, right? it's incomplete and out of context. It's not the whole, it's not an interview. It's just a clip. It's been edited down by somebody who's biased to make somebody look bad. Mm-hmm. And so the government wanted to call the person who took the video, a journalist, to testify about the video. Well, journalists have rights and privilege about how they edit or different things they do. I don't fully understand that. We've talked about it some, but so, you know, his attorney filed a motion to quash the subpoena under a First Amendment privilege. And so they basically litigated, you know, I just sat and watched, but it was the government arguing with Sepulveda's lawyer about why he should be compelled to testify, and his attorney asserting his privilege and things of that nature. And so the judge, right, who hasn't, you know, shown much light to the Constitution, really took the government to task and asserted that, well, he obviously has a privilege and he obviously has these rights and, you know, you obviously can't do that. And it was long, but she was really taking up his cause about his rights and privilege. And good honor, right? I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. The interesting part was after, you know, all this testimony where she takes the government to task about how and why they can't compel him to do that, and he has a privilege, and he has a Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, given what the government's bringing, and so she says, okay, I'm going to grant the motion to quash that he doesn't have to testify. And then as soon as she leaves, she's like, but you could call Ammon Bundy because he's been acquitted and he doesn't have a Fifth Amendment right here anymore. And the government's like, well, we sort of figured that he did. Right? So she just champions Oregon Public Broadcasting, this sort of biased reporter's right, just a champion for his rights and privilege. I mean, it was beautiful, right? Constitutional magic. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they're out the door, just trashes the rights of Ryan Bundy and the rights of us considering the bias and incompleteness of the material. You know, I think I might just let it in anyways, and if you guys want, you can call Ryan Bundy. Like, we can't compel him to testify either. He's got privilege. Mm-hmm. He's got a Fifth Amendment right. He's still culpable for something that didn't get waived up here. I forget what the charge is. Like, one of his charges was a hung jury. So he's still got that. And she's just like, oh well, we'll just make him testify. Right? If you basically saying, if you give me a subpoena, I'll compel him to come testify. But she hasn't made a ruling on the evidence yet. And so by default, she hasn't ruled on a subpoena for Ryan Bundy yet. But apparently Oregon Public Broadcasting has all these rights, and she's a champion for the Constitution. And once they're gone, Ryan Bundy has no rights, and he's gonna do what she says.
Right, right.
And I'm not even doing it justice. If you, dude, you know how I go to court. I mean, I've been to a lot of court. It's all fascinating to me. This was the most interesting court hour that I've ever been in. Where you just totally champion rights and then totally smash them in the very next sentence.
Yeah, right.
One person has rights and another person doesn't.
Yep. You know, they say that, or I say that philosophy is just finding the loopholes in logic. Sounds like she's more of a philosophical judge with the law.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, see how many loopholes we could find for, yeah. So, I'm going to assume that you guys are going back to court Monday?
Yeah, so we ended early. The prosecution has, five or six witnesses, and they're pretty sure they'll be done on Monday. They have Blaine Cooper. They didn't list him as somebody that will testify because they said they're not sure yet, but they did give us a report. You know, for cross-examination, they got to give us something, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So we got like this, just pages and pages, and most of it's redacted. I didn't read any of it yet, but I need to.
Mm-hmm.
About what Blaine Cooper may possibly testify to.
Mm-hmm. Any idea as to what that might be?
No, I didn't read. I haven't read the report yet that they give up.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, another day in paradise over there. So, basically, I guess the way that you're kind of laying it out is the defense has just kind of been like me and you, ho-hee-hum on some of this cross-examination with the parade of FBI witnesses that are basically saying something happened at the refuge.
Yeah, I think, so this guy testifies for, a couple of hours. And he's got all these meticulous notes about guns and where he found them and where they were on the refuge and where he found them, where they were on the refuge. And one of them he found inside this particular truck, which was just one of them. But it was a private vehicle, not, I don't know if some of them were government vehicle. I don't really remember because I wasn't paying that much attention because it was long and boring. But so when it's all done, Jesse Merrithew asks this guy with these meticulous notes about all these guns. He's like, okay, so you said you found such and such in this green truck. Okay. And there was a warrant, sir, for that truck? Yeah. Okay, whose truck was that? Oh, I have no idea.
Nope. Great. That's great stuff.
No notes on that. All the meticulous notes and all the long testimony, and then one question. Okay, so whose truck was that you served the warrant on where you got those? Oh, I don't know. I don't know who it was.
And then there's like a mic drop. That's great.
Right. No more questions, Your Honor.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah, you said this would be a short one. That's cool. So we do have a little bit of time. There are some questions that I wanted to ask you in regards to, you know, of course, there was a lot of stuff when you guys were arrested and put in jail. How were you guys treated? Because, you know, everybody's emotions were high and things were tense, and there were some reports where you guys were being abused while you were in custody during that whole long, almost a year, wasn't it, for you?
No, I was only in for 6 months. There's guys that have been in for a year.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you, dude. Jail sucks.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, at least 50%, maybe 60% of the guards are just terrible. They're the king of their castle. They can do no wrong. They can say no wrong. They think they can treat you however they want. And then, you know, 40% of the guards, there's probably another, maybe 20% of the guards that are just collecting their paycheck. Like, don't bug me and I won't bug you. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, another 20% of the guards that are just decent guys, you know, decent human beings. They know they have to do this job. They treat you with respect. They prefer that you treat them with respect. I don't think they can't get, you know, they can't do the job if need be, but they just as soon treat people with respect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the bad is always worse than the good. You know what I mean? When you're measuring it, right? I'm in there trying to basically mind my own business, right?
Right.
And I'm just hassled, right? Just hassled about the smallest, dumbest things by power-tripping guards.
Mm-hmm. It's
annoying and frustrating and wears you down.
For people who haven't spent any time in jail or any prolonged period of time in jail, give us an average day. I mean, you're speaking to the choir, you know, but obviously the cell is not a 5-star hotel. It's, you know, going to be small. But walk us through an average day in jail.
You know, different jurisdictions have different things. So the jurisdiction in Portland, it sounds like you have to spend. I don't know, 10 days in what they call processing, I guess, where you go in solitary. You're in a solitary cell with a big, picture frame window through the door so they can keep an eye on you. So they come, I don't know how many times, but a lot, and check every cell. But everybody's locked in a cell. You get to come out for, twice a day for a half hour. And the rest of the time you spend in your cell, they let you out to come get a tray. of your meal, three times a day for your meal. So the door buzzes, you come down, you get your breakfast, you take your breakfast back up to your door, and you eat your breakfast in your cell. And then they give you, I don't know, 15 minutes to eat your breakfast, and the door buzzes, you take your tray back down, and you go back up into your cell. And then they do that again for lunch. And then there's a half hour, like I think in the late afternoon, and then you, where you're out and you watch TV and make a phone call and try to get a shower, and then you're back in your cell, and then you, at dinner, you're buzzed out, go get your dinner, come back and eat it, and then later you're buzzed out for a half hour again to try to finish up whatever you didn't finish up the first half hour.
Right, and then when you were put into, I guess, general population,
So that lasted, you know, I don't remember, it was a year ago, but I think that lasted for me, I don't know, it was a week or 10 days. And then I got moved over to, the maximum security of a different facility, much bigger facility. There's no picture window, and it's a maximum security, the maximum security side of the big jail. So you know maximum security is all the guys that can't be in general population for whatever reason, whether they're dangerous or sometimes it's people who snore, so, you know, keep people awake so they get... You know, because other inmates can file complaints about you in your own dorm, and if you get too many complaints, you have to go to this maximum security side, or if you have disciplinary issues. And I spent about a month there. But there we got to come out for, about 2 hours a day? Mm-hmm. You know, come out for, no, I think three. It was an hour and a half. Rather than a half hour, you get an hour and a half, and then in the morning and an hour and a half at night, and then it switches to late afternoon and later in the night. There was two walks. But so there you spend 21 hours a day in your cell. You still get buzzed out for meals and whatnot, but you get a little bit more time out. And then eventually, since I was such a model inmate, I got to move to general population. And I don't think, see, and that's different because some people don't like a dorm style living. Like guys that I knew that got arrested here didn't really like dorm style living. They preferred to be in their cell rather than sleeping in a pod with six other people. Mm-hmm. You know, cause you know, in general population, there was fights and cliques and, you know, jail.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I get along with most people. So, I didn't have too much time. I mean, I got warned by different cliques that, you know, be careful who you're talking to and friends with, because there's cliques here. You know, you don't want to fall in with the wrong folks, but, you know, I have a meter, so I, you know, and the fact that, you know, in jail, I was sort of a celebrity inmate.
Right.
You know what I mean? In jail, most people in jail like people who make stands against government.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, they do. Hey, man, can you so help me with that case?
Yeah. So I didn't have to watch I wasn't having to watch my back, somebody trying to shank me or the fights that happen or anything really like that. So that was fortunate, and I get along with most people. So, I did, having been mistreated really badly in Georgia for those 11 days, it was a precursor to this. You know, the toughest part for me was trying to get along with guards who were just complete assholes.
Right, right. And I imagine you got a lot of reading done, because I know, I mean, you don't really have full, I know in here in Georgia, you don't really have, you have two TVs, and one of them is not coming off of March Madness basketball. You're just good luck. never going to happen. Sports is going to be playing on that TV, no matter what. So you hoping that you hope and you pray that the guys who are at the other TV aren't really always into toilet humor and have to watch Jerry Springer or the equivalent. So you got that factor.
Oh, there was that. I don't really watch that much TV anyway. Like, you know, the problem was because there was sort of politics going on leading up to the thing. I always want to hear what the leading ding dongs in political races say, but nobody in jail wants to watch that crap. So.
Hell no, you're out of luck there.
So every once in a while I'd catch a bit of that, but it was, you know, from a social experiment, it was interesting watching how fights can develop over what's on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I sort of stood up for the weaker side of an argument, about the TV because somebody was domineering it and I inserted myself, which is probably dangerous, but I did anyways. And, you know, and the TV ultimately got shut off because somebody was making a stink about it.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make it popular, but, you know, one side says, you know, I'm glad, I'm tired of watching basketball. But I played that, you know, there was, fortunately, this particular jail, because I didn't see that, you know, in Georgia, that it had a basketball court. So, you know, in the open dorm, the open dorm. This is what I forgot to tell you. I think I told you this, like I had called you before, but so in the open dorm, I'd never been in an open dorm. So when I get there, everybody's sort of walking around. Well, come 2:00, it's like bunk in, like go to your bunk, 2:00 in the afternoon. And so we go to our bunks. And so people are just sort of yucking it up and talking, and, you know, it's not supremely loud. And all of a sudden it's like, quiet, everybody's got to be quiet. And so for like an hour, it's like preschool. You put your heads on your desks and don't make a peep.
Yeah.
Time. And the guard does a count, like he walks through and scorns at people who might be making a peep. And, you know, he's walking around scowling. And I was watching, like, because I've never seen this before, and I busted out laughing and couldn't stop.
Right.
Right, because I haven't been in preschool since I was in preschool.
Right.
You know, put your head on your desk and be quiet was a weird sort of, it was a weird social thing. Like, everybody's doing this. Like, wait a minute. Some bully said everybody's got to be in here and be quiet and everybody's going to do it. I understand he'll mace you and tase you and beat the crap out of you if you don't, but there's 60 of us and only one of him.
Right now I'm writing a fictional story that is highly inspired by real life events, and the main character of the story happens to find himself in jail and makes a lot of connections with the cinder block walls, walking in single file line, and not being able to speak above a whisper in the hallways, or, you know, you're going to get called out, and comparing it to you know, the government school system going, wait a minute, were they preparing us for something and we just didn't know about
it? Exactly. Yeah. So, all right, kids, put your heads on your desks and be quiet. Nobody makes a peep or they get the ruler.
Yeah, come get your tray, you know. Now, the food. Tell me about the food. I mean, I know about the food.
The food is fortunately, I got commissary. So when I was the first 2.5 weeks I was there, I wouldn't have been able to maintain weight because, well, not that I need to maintain it, but it's just not a lot of food. What's funny, dude, is I guarantee you, so when I got there, when I first got into jail, they were these teeny, tiny little portions.
Oh, yeah.
It was not enough food. After about 2 weeks, I noticed the portions getting bigger, and all the inmates started thanking all of us that had gotten, because, like, everybody, every one of us never been in jail before. Well, you know what I mean. Most of them hadn't. I've been in jail before, but not for very long.
Right.
But, so a lot of complaints started coming in, like there's not enough food and we're getting mistreated by the guards. And, you know, most people I think that go in and out of jail don't really complain about those things. Don't assert their rights. They don't make waves inside of jail. Like, the jail didn't know what to do because there were so many waves being made when we got in there due to the treatment inside the jail. So after about 2.5 weeks, I noticed the portions getting bigger, and all the guys would come up and say, "Hey, man, thanks, y'all." And like, what are you talking about? The portions have gotten bigger. We know it's because y'all are in here.
Yeah. So, yeah. About
food. Like, they know that you guys have people out there that care about you and will raise issues with the jail system if they're not following. So the food has gotten larger portions, better food since y'all got here. And we know it's because y'all are making waves.
That's great. That's
on the outside about how we're mistreated in here.
That is absolutely fat. That's great to hear.
So
if you can call it food, I mean, for one.
You're breaking up.
I said that it's good to hear that, but even with the larger portions, I don't know if you can qualify or define what they give you in jail as food.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. There's some guys in there say it's better than what we got in the military. I've never been in the military, so I couldn't speak to that, but... you know, it's a little half a cup of salad and a lot of beans and rice. You know, they have one night that's meat patty, but I don't believe it's meat. I think it's soy, and that was my favorite night. And you know, you can, of course, it's illegal, but you can trade commissary for food as long as you do it discreetly. Either got a guard who doesn't care that you do it, only if he gets caught not caring, he gets in trouble. Or you got to sneak it past the guard who does care and thinks that you shouldn't trade food. But
now
there's me telling you, know, now, hey, everyone, traded food while I was in jail.
Right. Oh, you're guilty. Ramen noodles. I know here ramen noodles in jail is like currency. It's money.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, is dudes will shank each other over a ramen noodle packet.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
But yeah, it's currency, and what's funny is, it's a strange thing. I got commissary in the open dorm, and in the open dorm that I was in, I was the only long-term tenant. Like, most guys came in there prior to their court date, went back. You know, guys were there for a week or 2 weeks, most of them. There was only a few long-term guys. Some of the long-term guys didn't have commissary. Well, if you have commissary, some of these guys are coming in, and they're not going to get commissary for 2 or 3 days, only they really want food, and they'll trade you 2 for 1 or 3 for 1 for your commissary. So I think one of the reasons I got moved out of that dorm is because I was trading 2 for 1 or 3 for 1 all the time, and I always had commissary because it would come back, like, mm-hmm. You know, making deals.
Yeah, you were a kingpin. whoever's got the most ramen noodles or chips and stuff in jail is the kingpin. Let me make you an offer refuse. Two creamy chickens for a shrimp.
You know, and most of the guys that are in there, you know, won't give food to guys on credit. You know, I'm not going to give you a ramen noodle today for 2 ramen noodles on Thursday because I don't trust anybody in jail. Well, you know, Jason likes everybody. Sure, I got you a ramen noodle, no problem. You give me 2 on Thursday, cool. And I was just trading all the time. So I have a full drawer of commissary and then all of a sudden, you know, about, 3 months there, and you got to move. Where am I moving?
Here's something that people don't know. Okay, and if you eat ramen noodles on the outside of jail, you have the luxury of something called boiling water to eat your ramen noodles with. So in jail, you don't really have boiling water to properly cook the noodles. At least you don't, here in Georgia.
In Portland, they have microwaves.
Really? You lucky bastard.
They have a microwave privilege. The guard can turn it on or off, right? And on commissary day, he'll use the privilege of using the microwave to his benefit to get the reaction that he wants. So yes, you can cook ramen noodles unless you've been too loud or done something to lose microwave privileges.
And see, here's what I had to do. Because when you go in, they don't tell you anything. You have to learn from your cellmate. But you have to actually, to get slightly higher than room temperature water, you have to go to the showers and hit that hot button water as many times as you can with a solo cup, and then put it on top of the light fixture in your cell for like an hour to even get it somewhat edible.
Yep. Yeah, there was not all the dorms downtown don't have microwaves, so there you're using shower water. But the other thing that was interesting I've ever seen is how they cook that stuff into something that's like completely edible.
Okay, I want you to talk about that.
Cheetos.
Because here in Georgia we call them pockets, but I want you to describe how to make a pocket.
I don't want to. You know, we're sort of glamorizing this thing, aren't we? I mean,
well, I don't want other people to go and have to experience this shit. Go ahead, tell them in brief how you do it, because it's nasty as hell.
Well, they have a million different types of chips, right? And chips aren't really chips in jail; they're seasoning. So you get your ramen noodles, and then you get like this imitation cheese dip. And you get the particular types of chips that you like. Most guys here like Flaming Hot Cheetos. And then you get like those cheap 99-cent beef sticks and a little tiny packet of jalapenos. And you buy all that from the commissary and then some tortillas. And then in a plastic bag, you mix the ramen noodles and like chop those ingredients up in different ways. And crunch all the hot Cheetos up, and you throw it all in the ramen noodles, and you mix it all around, and then add a little bit more water till it's like mush, only with ramen noodles, and then you throw that into a burrito and eat it.
Right. So it's something similar here is where you do that. You take your ramen noodles, and if you're clever, you can, because you get a boiled egg, like on Tuesday mornings, you sneak your boiled egg and you get the pickle juice from a pickle from commissary. You crunch up your, after you eat your chips, the bag's still got the seasoning in it, put your noodles in there, put your egg in there, cut it up however you can, and mix it with pickle juice and let it sit for like a day. I'm looking at these guys like, okay, all of you cook meth on the outside, right? Because this is...
Well, I remember the very first time the guys were talking, hey, you want to go in on a spread? They call them spreads here. You want a spread? I'm like, what are you talking about? I says, well, you know, I don't have any commissary, you know, back then I didn't. I says, but I'm going to be ordering some. You tell me what to order go next time. And so I'm watching this process happen. And there's like 9 guys in on this spread. It's like a huge garbage bag full of ramen and all kinds of chaos. And he's mixing it, and he's got these little sort of plastic bag-type gloves, and he's mixing all this stuff. I'm watching him going, what in the hell are you doing? And so so for like an hour, he's cooking and mixing and cooking and mixing and cooking and mixing, and I'm thinking, there's no way you're going to eat that. And so when it got all done, he splits it 9 ways into some bowls, and I'm like, well, you know, he says, you want to try it? I'm like, well, sure, I think. Right? He's like, gives me a little taste, and I'm expecting chaos, right? And I go, well, darn, that's got, because there's no salt, right? There's no salt in jail. You can't get salt for your meal. So this is the closest thing I'd had to salt. And I'm like, wow, that's got flavor, right? The food we eat doesn't have flavor. So all of a sudden it was the flavor. I don't know. For me, it was good because it was closer to outside food, even though it was just garbage. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I sort of liked it and then began spreading more often. But at the end of the day, dude, it sucks, right? Mm-hmm. It's not liberty. you're just making the best of with what you can make given the situation that you're forced into.
But it does, I tell you what though, the good side of it is that it does make you appreciate when you do walk out. So, I mean, any time that I've ever been in there for, you know, more than a day or two, when you walk outside, the sun takes on a brand new meaning, the grass, air, the wind.
Well, it was weird for me because I'd been in, you know, I had spent, I'd been out in the country for 3 months and then got moved to jail, been in jail for 6 months, and then got let out in downtown Portland. Mm-hmm. Didn't really know my way around, had the whole trauma of, you know, being surrounded by federal agents and transported by 18 military soldiers in 3 Lenco Bearcat vehicles, been tortured by the guard, making the best of a bad situation, and now all of a sudden you're out. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I felt really, really small in the big city for a while, like looking over my shoulder and let's go to the park where I can just sit down because this is, you know, just being in 6 months, dude, trying to reacclimate to, and it might not have been so bad had I been, you know, been able to go out into the woods in Georgia, you know, what I'm used to, you know, deer hunting and whatnot, but because I was sort of stuck in downtown Portland, I had to go to the park and sit down for a couple of hours and reacclimate to being in the world.
Yep. Well, we're coming up on almost an hour, and most of this we've been talking about jail food, which is good because people have an experience, but I do want to end it with this. The last time that
But on that note too, dude, there's a bunch of guys in Nevada, 19, 20 guys that have been in jail for a year having never been convicted, right? They're going to get out, and it's going to be weird for them, I think. Hopefully they're coming out on acquittal, so they'll come out on a high note. But how do we change it, right? A lot of the guys are in there for victimless crimes, right? Because, you know, we don't treat addiction, we jail it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, despite all the cool jail stories, you know, the situation should change. You know, we're supposedly a free country, and we've got the most incarcerated people of any other country in the world.
And I mean, me and you both know why that is. I mean, these are privately run and owned facilities. Like here in Georgia, that facility down in Perry is a privately run company. And I think at last check, it was like they get $75 a day per person in those pods. And me and my cellmate calculated up how much money they bring in. And even if you cut electricity, utilities, and all of the maintenance and everything, making money hand over fist for primarily victimless crimes. And it costs like $5 a day or less to feed and clothe them. So it's like there's a vested interest to put people in these places.
Yeah, and I saw something the other day that said, let me get this straight. Criminals are people who break the law, and you're going to make more laws to make less criminals. How does that work?
Yeah.
Right? We got to make more laws so there's less crime. Well, hold on. Crime is when you break the law. How are you going to make less crime by making more law?
Right.
Wouldn't you by default be making more crime? If more things are a crime, that by default makes more criminals. It doesn't make less crime. It makes more crime.
Yep.
Because now everything's a crime. Breathing's a crime if you don't have health insurance. And if everything's a crime, how are you making less criminals? The whole structure is, like you said, for profit.
It's a prison industrial complex, you know. But before
let's make more laws. And we'll say we're going to make more laws so that we'll make less crime. Only we know by default, by making more laws, we make more crime because now more things are illegal, and by default, there's more criminals. And then we'll tax, fine, tax, whatever you want to call it, the criminals. Only they probably can't pay. And then we'll get people who believe this lie to pay us to make more jails, to bring more criminals. On and on to oblivion.
Security for security.
So we keep right? Because right now they have a 74-year-old rancher in a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years for doing what ranchers do, and that is to burn grass to improve the land for cattle.
Yeah.
You know, trust me, that wasn't always illegal in America, but we're going to make less crime by throwing ranchers in jail for burning grass.
It's
you know, and he's in there under the 1996 counterterrorism law. So basically, what we're doing is we're making less terrorists by throwing ranchers in jail for burning grass.
Yeah,
lopsided. We had a lighthearted conversation, but that's the seriousness of it, right? I doubt Dwight Hammond is having a really good time eating spreads in jail at 74 years old when he could be home with his aging wife, living out his happy years on his ranch in Harney County, doing what he's always done.
Do you think that there's any possibility, of course, well, we might not want to speak about that, but I would like to make the notation that I can't see the future, but it would be, to me, it would be poetic if everyone is acquitted and then goes right back to the Dwight Hammond cause, you know. It is a sticky thing because, to me, it's saying, well, I mean, he outright said he didn't want, he was willing to go back to jail, you know. So it's like, I get why you're doing that, guy. You know, you're older, you're tired, you don't want to fight the government, you just kind of want to do your time. Well, it's not really your time to do. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't with Dwight Hammond, because it's like, how do you fight for somebody who, he may want to fight for himself, but he's just tired. You know,
that's what America's founded on. We're supposed to fight for the underdogs. It's the rights of all the people, dude. It's not like, hey, I'm going to violate Daniel Crompton's constitutional rights, and he's tired of being beat on, so he's just going to say, forget it, nobody cares, and I'll just go to jail because nobody cares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? You don't not fight for the Constitution because the person that's being abused, you know, that's like saying, oh, I saw this girl getting raped, but she didn't look like she was fighting, so I just let the dude rape her.
Yeah, right.
You know, she sort of said, hey, listen, this rape sucks. But I was like, well, you're not fighting for yourself, so fuck you. I mean, excuse my language.
No worries.
Go ahead and get raped.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not how it works, man. Right?
Yeah.
Just because Dwight's being raped, his constitutional rights, his land rights, his grass rights, his cattle rights, his life, his liberty, and his property is being raped, and he won't, and he's been raped so much that he doesn't even think he'll resist. We say, oh, well, you didn't care you were being raped, so why should we care you were being raped?
Yeah.
It's not how it works.
No, shouldn't work that way, and it would be poetic if everybody who was involved, well, minus, you know, the provocateurs and the informants, if everyone was acquitted and said, okay, let's pick up where we left off and go do something else about this, that would be poetic.
Well, it's hard, man. If think about it, dude, there's 100,000 people who know this is wrong.
Yeah.
Do we just go in and get them out of jail? Or would you kill everybody that tried to do that? And then take, okay, so that's Dwight Hammond. He's 74. Now let me transition to Baby Holmes, who was just brand new born and stolen from his parents. Who's being abused by the system. And they're fighting the best they can, which is to say, they're saying, hey, this is wrong. You shouldn't be able to do this. No, Your Honor, I have rights and to freedom of religion, and I don't want to do all these things that you seem to think you can force me to do to get my baby back. Are they fighting efficiently enough while being raped by the system that somebody should go fight with them, or do we just say, well, geez, you're not quite fighting hard enough for your rights, and so we're just going to continue letting the system rape you?
In regards to the Holmes situation, do you know if there's any unified front to come to their aid yet? Any organization, any spokesperson that's kind of stepped into
the
gap?
There's no such thing as unified front. There's people who recognize right from wrong, and they won't let evil continue to happen in their city, in their county, in their state, or in their country. Just because the bullies with the guns say that they're right doesn't mean that they are.
Right.
I don't know how we... That's a pretty big hurdle, though, because those jokers will kill you, especially if you tell them they're wrong.
Right. Well, you know, hopefully people will wake
but
up.
But, yeah, spreads in jail are cool, but, you know, meanwhile, the Holmes family is being raped by a system who stole their baby, and Dwight Hammond, who's 74 years old, is being raped by a system that won't let him ranch efficiently.
Right. Yep.
And it's not okay with me. Right? I understand where America was founded. I understand the Constitution. I hear people say all the time this is a free country because they're so deluded with their own whatever that they can't seem to have blinders on and will let people get raped. They'll let their neighbor get raped by the system because they don't know their neighbor well enough to go, hey, no, Jim's a cool guy. You can't do that to him. You know, I don't know how you make our society care on a level that I see the entire country sort of crying out for it in different ways. You know, it's real.
Yep, it's going to take...
You and I aren't new to it. Baby boo-boo, Habersham County. SWAT team blows up a baby. I don't think anybody got held accountable for that, but the government paid $3.2 million of somebody else's money. I know Tamir Rice was a little kid who had a toy who got killed in 1.8 seconds by a cop. I don't think anybody went to jail, but they got paid $5 million.
Right.
I know Kelly Thomas, a homeless guy in California, got beat to death by some crazy cops because he was homeless and at the bus stop and didn't answer the questions correctly, and they got $5 million. And I'm going to tell you what, if my kids get beat to death by some arrogant prick, $5 million is not going to cut it for me.
No.
It's not.
No. And a lot of that is, and me and you have run into this a lot, and anybody who does do any kind of activism, the police and state agencies are unified, and they have a huge misconception of what we say. We have to be very careful with what we're saying. You know, we've said on several occasions, we are not anti-police. You know, and that's been thrown up to you and me several times. Oh, you guys are just, you're against cops. You hate all cops. No, you're not listening to what we're saying. We love peace officers. We love them. We support them.
Yeah.
We will do everything that we can to assist peace officers. But when the line is stepped over from peace officer to this new thing recently, you know, not recent new, but new, into law enforcement.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, what I have to realize is, you know, we've been doing this, what, 5 years now? And, you know, Randy Balco wrote Rise of the Warrior Cop. And there's this collective conscience that's raising that nearly unilaterally sees the problem. And most of America knows that there needs to be some sort of peace officer, only we call it law enforcement now. And so it's a faction and it divides. But I got to think, with as much stuff as has been exposed in the last 5 years since we started down this path, that the collective conscience is rising enough that there will be some sort of, you know, what I'm hoping is that different police jurisdictions are realizing this on their own, and they even acknowledge there's something wrong, and we need to change this somehow.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it doesn't happen unilaterally in all jurisdictions. It happens in pockets all over the country. So you got to be able to recognize good and bad. But the thing of it is, it's not only the cop's fault. Like I said, if everything's illegal and his job is law enforcement, that means he's got to arrest everybody all the time because mm-hmm. everything is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so somehow we've got to back away from the buffet and say, you know, there are certain things in life that just shouldn't be illegal, and we shouldn't be getting these guys to put themselves in harm's way to do these terrible things to people who haven't harmed anyone.
Right.
And I got to believe that it's coming to light, right? We've been doing this a long time. Do you see that? I mean, do you look at it enough to see, like, somewhere in some places there's pockets of change that are beginning to realize this and trying to do what they can do in their own community, or even as an individual officer, and says, this is wrong, and I want us to do better. I'm going to do better because I don't like what I'm seeing in the world either.
Yeah, I believe it's happening, and I believe that, you know, you're going to have to change it from the inside out, and it has to happen on a local level first. Just a quick story I might have told you before, I might not have, but you're aware that I was arrested for walking a dog in a public park, and they held me in a cell for, you know, 3 days. To which, you know, I went on a hunger strike because it was ridiculous, 10 minutes in a park after curfew. And they did the good cop, bad cop thing with me. They did every tactic that they could to try to get me to eat. And finally, there was one young guy, he couldn't have been 22, 23 years old, you know, who he was just transporting prisoners from, you know, the city jail to the county. And he had heard about me. And, you know, he had no business with me, but he wanted to speak with me, and came into my cell and said, hey, man, you know, I've been hearing about these guys that, you know, this is what happened to you, and you're refusing to process, and you're refusing to eat, and can you explain why you're doing this? And he was genuinely, you know, he really wanted to know what the deal was, because it just didn't sit right with him. And he spent about 45 minutes in my cell, and I explained the Constitution to him, and I explained, you know, what a peace officer was and what a law enforcement officer was in the prison industrial complex. And he started taking notes. Like, he started writing down the references to what I was saying. And he looked at me and he just shook his head. And he said, all this stuff about the Constitution, when I was in the academy, they never taught me any of this stuff at all. I said, of course not. And, he said, so, you know, after our conversation was done, he got chided by the other officers. Like, well, you want to share a bunk with him? You know, because he was listening to me. And basically before he left, he said, so you're not going to process, you're not going to eat, you know, man, all you got to do is process and you can walk out of here. And I said, let me ask you a question. Is you going to make this a career? He goes, well, I'd hoped on, you know, being a police officer, you know, as a career. Yeah. And I said, I'll tell you what, are you going to, these references and these notes that I've given you, are you going to go research them? Well, yeah, of course. You know, I've never heard any of this stuff before. It's intriguing. I said, I'll tell you what, if you're going to make a career out of this, I said, you study that Constitution and you study rights and you study the rights of the people that, you know, you're supposed to protect. And then one day you run for sheriff. And he looked at me and he understood that I was tasking him with a quest, you know, and he says, I'll do it. I said, now, when you become sheriff, I said, I want you to run for sheriff, and I want you to make a difference. I want you to get whatever county you end up being, you know, sheriff of, to return to this document. Give me your word. And he looked at me, and he held his hand out. And so I shook his hand out, you know, and he said, I give you my word, I'll do that. I said, now I'll process. And then I processed and I walked right out, you know, and the other police officers who could not get me to budge, they just looked at me. They said, you're a man on a mission, ain't you? I said, you got that right. Well, what did he do that made you process? I said, he gave me his word that he would change this. Now, that kid was in his 20s, so that's going to take, that's a seed. that's going to take a little bit of time. But, you know, I believe in my heart that that and kid is going to keep his word.
And I think, you know, honestly, that's what trying to reinstill the proper jurisdiction, mm-hmm. where your local sheriff deals locally mm-hmm. with the local population in the most effective way, where it's not just this bigger top-down structure where everybody bows to the king. It's localized, right, where the sheriff has the proper jurisdiction inside of his own county,
right.
constitutionally.
Right.
And back to a community, you know what I mean? Back sort of the way that it was founded. Yeah, it's not anti-police. It's not anti-government. It's certainly anti-huge, ginormous, unconstitutionally out-of-control government. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't it be? But not, you know, local, elected, constitutional.
The Ninth and the Tenth Amendment are our greatest hopes in regards to that. You know, I've had quite a few older police officers in my home that, you know, when we're done with our business, they say, you know, whenever I retire, I'd like to have some coffee with you and talk politics. And then I just kind of chuckle under my breath and I say, why when you retire? You know, well, I don't want the other guys on the force to know that. Like, dude, you could have coffee with me tonight if you'd like.
All right, guys, this has been the Jason Patrick Project update for February the 24th, and as always, if you support Jason Patrick and his efforts to restore a constitutional republic, bring awareness to instances of injustice in our country, please go to GoFundMe.com/JasonPatrick and make a generous donation. Also, you can go to downloadedcontent.com/JPP to contact Jason directly and find out what he's up to. You can also go to Facebook and find him at Jason Patrick. That's his personal page, as well as the Fight for Freedom Never Sleeps and the Jason Patrick Project on Facebook. Also, if you want to support Downloaded Content as a whole, you can go to patreon.com/DLC and help us out there and keep us doing things like this. We're going to be talking to Jason Monday as the trial continues, and we look forward to bringing it to you. You guys have a wonderful weekend.
Downloaded Content Podcast. Downloaded.